Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing late on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, where he attended the Knicks victory over the 76ers in game one of that series on Saturday, Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
Joining us from Los Angeles, a building that's hosted this podcast many, many times, but this time it's Ben McMahon joining us.
Howdy, partners. I asked for the Windhorse Suite, and they turned me down. They said, your name's not on the podcast, buddy.
Last time I was there, I got like a six-room suite. Of course, it was just for one night. Thank you, that hotel that shall go unnamed. All right, you were at the Mavericks' stunningly flat performance against the LA Clippers on Sunday, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, but there was really only one game that came down to the wire this weekend. I know that the Knicks and Sixers played an entertaining game, but only one game went down all the way to the buzzer, and that was the Pelicans and Thunder, which was the last game. It just ended. We waited for it to end here before we started. It was not a banner performance by either team. Very nervy performance, very nervy moments, especially from the Thunder. Even Mark Dagenault, who very well could win Coach of the Year, he was nervy at times down the stretch. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander had a couple of turnovers late in the fourth quarter and not what we're used to from him. But when it mattered, SGA made two huge hoops and the Thunder got some great defensive plays, including on the last possession. Cason Wallace, their rookie, Dagenault, put him into the game for the last possession. That was a savvy move by likely Coach of the Year. And he did a great job shutting down CJ McCollum. CJ got a shot off and it could have easily gone in and they could have won the game, but it was only after terrific defense. And that was the only game that was really in doubt until the end. And the home teams go 8-0 this weekend. First time that's happened since 2013. So definitely a rarity that the home teams all hold serve. A shaky holding of the serve, Bontemps, for the Thunder. This is what people thought about. They thought that their inexperience would be a factor. I do think that it was, but it didn't cost them a game. And even though it was ugly, Shai made the baskets he needed to make, and they're up 1-0 and in good position, I think, with Zion maybe missing this whole series.
Yeah, I mean, look, the Pelicans obviously fought incredibly hard in this game, and Trey Murphy, I think, showed why he needs to be in the starting five next year, which is going to lead to some questions about what the Pelicans need to do going forward. But yeah, look, you saw
at least
all
some questions
weekend
about what they're going to pay him this summer. That's going to lead to questions.
That too. But they're going to also have to make some bigger decisions that are going to open up a spot for him probably. But we saw all weekend, and we're going to talk about these other games, but we saw teams like the Orlando Magic in their playoff debut look shook. We saw the Indiana Pacers earlier today look shook. A team basically of all guys who hadn't really been in the playoffs before in the primary spots. And we saw the Thunder in this game look like, for the most part, even their best players, other than Jalen Williams, who was incredible basically all throughout, they, like you said, look like a team playing in an incredibly charged atmosphere for the first time,
yeah,
which is totally to be expected.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty impressive. Shai was up for as one of the finals for Clutch Player of the Year. We have talked a bunch about his ability to make big plays for this team late in games. You mentioned the turnovers. He doesn't ever turn the ball over. Had a couple, I think three really bad ones in the fourth quarter. Looked like the game was going to maybe get away. Then he comes down, makes a tremendous pull-up jumper to tie the game, and then makes an absolute ridiculous circus shot over CJ McCollum to put them up. And you mentioned it. We have talked a lot on this pod about the Josh Giddey spot on the court. There's been a lot of protestations from Oklahoma City land about how dare you say these things about Josh Giddey. He's making all this great progress. He's doing great. Everything's hunky-dory. Everything's awesome. Guy played 19 minutes. Was nowhere to be seen down the stretch. And the guy we've talked about a lot, potentially being out there instead of him, Cason Wallace, like you said, plays incredible defense on CJ McCollum on the last play of the game. By the way, also interesting, CJ got the ball there and not Brandon Ingram, who was horrendous in this game.
Yeah, well, you know why Brandon Ingram didn't get the ball.
Because Lou Dort was all up in his Kool-Aid.
Greg Anthony was on the color commentary for TNT, was all over this. How many inches has Brandon Ingram got on Dort? Seven inches?
Seven. Well, depends. Are we talking about height or biceps? Because it's about the same difference, just going the other way on, you know, on both.
He just couldn't do anything. He couldn't get space. He couldn't get square. Both teams had a lot of open shots that they missed.
Yep.
Our stats.
But Cason Wallace.
Yeah.
But Cason Wallace on the biggest play of the game plays tremendous defense. He did try to get him up in the air, try to get him to draw a foul, stayed on his feet, CJ ends up getting through, has to take a really difficult shot, misses, and they win the game. And look, for a young team, obviously going through this for the first time, the Pelicans are a limited team without Zion, but that's still a very good win in a very tight circumstance. And I think as we get into the playoffs and these guys get comfortable, they're going to look better and better as it goes.
I agree.
Well, and you mentioned the Giddey situation, and they pulled the plug on him, 1-6 from the floor. Really, the two, I guess you could argue the three biggest concerns about the Thunder all kind of rear their heads here. You mentioned the inexperience. To me, that's the least of the concerns. Honestly, I don't think that Shea was rattled. I think he was dealing with a pretty damn good defender himself by the name of Herb Jones. He hit the one clutch pull-up over Jones, which was a tough, tough shot. The other one, they did a great job executing him and Jalen Williams to get the switch so he could attack CJ McCollum. So, you know, the inexperience, the Giddey, and then the rebounding. Chet had a huge clutch block late. It was their
fifth block of the game.
His fifth block of the game, I believe, was the Thunder's fourth shot of the possession.
And the Pelicans
the Pelicans' fourth shot.
In the paint the whole game because of Chet's presence around the rim. But
it's a 52-44 rebound advantage. Honestly, watching the game, I it felt more lopsided than that. Willie Green has a Valanciunas can really do some damage on the glass and did. Had 20 rebounds, 9 offensive. It's a give and take there, though, because he's going to
he's out when it mattered too. They got Larry Nance in there when
They had Larry Nance in there, but even when Nance was in there, the Pelicans were doing a lot of damage on the glass. Chet grabbed 11, but it's that small lineup just doesn't have much rebounding outside of him. So again, if you want to say their three biggest concerns all reared their heads in this game and they were still able to pull out the win. And SGA, as rough of a game as it was for much of it, hits two huge shots down the stretch, and you know, he's up for the clutch player of the year. He's a MVP finalist, and that's what MVP finalists and clutch players of the year do.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all that the Pelicans hung in this game without Zion. They are a resilient team. They are one of the best road teams in the league. I know that they're going to take away from this probably thinking that, you know, they'll play better, and I'm sure they will shoot the ball better. They missed a ton of open looks, but then again, so did the Thunder. You really wanted to get this game from Oklahoma City. They're tight in their first game. Their fans, it was an awesome scene with their fans totally on their feet and cheering 10 minutes before tip-off. But
oh, and then they had the pregame prayer and just really blew the top off that roof.
Man, OKC is coming for us after this one.
What?
That is an indication of your fans.
I know.
You know, not having been there in a while. It was 5 years since they had a home playoff game. Which I'm glad they're excited, but the team is the same way.
Have you been there for a playoff game, Brian?
Oh God, yes, many playoff games.
I'll say this.
Oh yeah, you were obviously there for the finals.
I've been there for first round playoff games. I've been there.
I mean McMahon and I have covered them together.
I've been around a long goddamn time.
You can't say that word on a Disney podcast. Listen, let me just tell you this: nobody does better coordinating on the free T-shirt wearing in the Oklahoma City
Thunder. Well, it's an awesome, I mean, some of my most memorable playoff game experiences are being at Thunder games. Like, the atmosphere there is off the charts, and it is different. It's fun to hear it.
These small markets tend to have the best playoff atmospheres because it is, you know, obviously other than Boomer Sooner, it's the only pro show in town. I guess you can talk about whatever the AAA team is.
The Oklahoma City Blue are G League champions. Excuse me, sir.
Well, I think that the atmosphere at those games surely had something to do with that run as well. But no, it's absolutely a charged atmosphere. I'm working on a theory here. I'm wondering if there's not a game one psychological effect when the opponent has the face of their franchise out. Now, it's not
that happens in the regular season.
It certainly happened in your game today.
Certainly happened in the Mavs Clippers game. I think it certainly happened in the Thunder Pelicans game. Maybe did not see it in the Celtics Heat game.
No, we saw it in the Pacers Bucks game.
In the Pacers Bucks, although the guy who was standing
That wasn't about Giannis not being there. The Pacers were just absolutely horrific. But
We'll get to that. Let's say one more thing about this game before we move on. Mark Daigneault played 11 guys in this game. Now I know that this is the way the Thunder have played all year.
Yeah.
They play their guys. They play deep. Let's see How
it was
long
a regular season. It was a regular season rotation. Yeah. I mean, well, Jalen Williams and Shea played around 40, but Chet Holmgren played 32. They played a lot of other guys in the 15-minute range across the board.
If you're tightening that rotation,
we'll see how long that lasts.
If you're tightening the rotation, who are you taking out? I don't think they're going to do the drastic thing that we've discussed before of not starting Giddey.
Well, as long as they're winning, they're not going to do that. But I'm just saying,
you're going to play
his game plan is his game plan. I'm just saying, when the bleep hits the fan, you play 8 and trust 7.
Now, Gordon Hayward,
Isaiah Joe is going to play. Mm-hmm. I think Cason Wallace is going to play. Mm-hmm. And I think Jalen Williams is going to play because they're going to need some size.
Jalen Williams.
The other Jalen Williams is obviously playing. We're not talking about him.
Yeah. I'm not saying in game two. I'm just saying keep an eye on that rotation as we get deeper. That's all. Because I've seen it 100 times.
Yeah, okay. I mean, Lou Dort playing 35, Chet playing 32. Like, there's a lot of minutes there to go up still, you know.
Yeah, well, Lou Dort was gold star for this game.
I felt bad not having him on my all-defense team because he was one of my final choices at spots. And I mean, it was tough. It was tough watching him do that. I mean, like, man, it's him and Herb were, like, basically my last two choices, and Herb was also awesome. So,
there's more than 10 I wish I could have put Chet Holmgren on the all defensive.
It'd be nice if there was a third all defensive team and one all rookie team. That would be fine with me. Let's do that.
By the way, the Laker fans were furious that Anthony Davis was not a finalist for defensive player of the year. Oh, yeah. They were furious.
Jackson with a stat. Chet, the first rookie ever to have 5 blocks and 2 threes in a playoff game. That's pretty good.
There'll be more.
You've got 3 more games that you're going to have to hear from those Lakers fans.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
All right. First, though, I want to talk about the game you were at today, McMahon. Kawhi Leonard was upgraded to questionable on Saturday. I have to say upgraded because he's been out for 3 weeks.
Right.
So they put him questionable, which is a routine thing when a player is going to come back from injury. He often gets, sometimes the previous game, he'll be upgraded to doubtful.
Right.
But we routinely see players who've been out put as questionable. And now Lawrence Frank came out, I think it was Thursday, and said that Kawhi hadn't taken contact yet, but that was Thursday. That wasn't Friday. That wasn't Saturday. They put him to questionable and then come out before the game and say he's out. It's fruitless to read tea leaves with the Clippers on Kawhi and especially knee injuries. But this was a first, putting him to questionable and then going to out. Wanted to know what sense you got, and I'm not holding you to any of it realized that not even some of the Clippers may know 100% what's going on here.
Does Ty Lue know? I'm not sure. But
I knew he was questionable because that's what they reported him as.
I can tell you what Ty Lue said. He said that he has still not done any contact work.
That's not good.
That he has been on the court. You know, he's been working on the court, but there's been no contact work. They're just going to take it day by day. But it's really difficult for me to imagine with the Clippers up 1-0 in a series that Kawhi would do contact work for the first time one day and then be in a game two the next.
When you've never played for 3+ weeks.
Yeah, that would be pretty surprising. Now, that's, you know, I'm not going to, there's no point in speculating, but that's the information that we have. So we'll see. Now, no Kawhi. The Clippers didn't play very well for the last several weeks of the season.
Several months, buddy.
The Mavericks played as well as anybody for the last 6 weeks of the season.
Without question.
Before taking their foot off the gas. And they could not find the gas pedal for the first half.
Worst half of the year, worst half of the second half. It was, what would you say?
Lowest scoring first half in franchise playoff history.
Yeah, they scored as bad a half as they've ever had.
They scored 8 points in the second quarter as a team. That's their lowest scoring quarter in any quarter this season. You know, you see 30 points for the Mavs at halftime and you think, oh, that was Luka? No, that was the entire team. And I mean, nobody used the words, we got punked, but there was a lot of talk about physicality and lack thereof. And, you know, Ivica Zubac is the one who really set the tone in this game. And they went to him on the block a few times very early, and he bullied Daniel Gafford. And Daniel Gafford laid a total egg. He got in early foul trouble. He did something to his foot. He said it's not a real concern.
But I mean, Paul George, like, forearm shivered him and knocked him down. I don't even know what that was about.
And he hurt his foot on that play, but he said that's not a big concern. He only played 14 minutes, 3 points, zero rebounds.
Yikes.
And this is a guy who has been really, really good since he was traded to Dallas. Relentless energy, rim protection, leads the league in field goal percentage, phenomenal finisher. He gave them none of that today. To his credit, he basically said, Zubats threw the first punch. There was no adjustment. I wasn't ready to play, and I've got to be better. He made no excuses, but he is 100% right. The Mavericks played small a fair amount, which was interesting. You know, they were also down 20-some-odd for most of the game.
When are you getting to your boy Harden? When are you going to mention that?
Oh, yeah. Hey, Nicholas Batum no longer has the best postseason performance so far this year of anybody involved in that trade. They needed, I'm not going to say prime Harden, but they needed the really good version of Harden. And he showed up, and he was knocking down his step backs early in the game. You know, they're up 26 at halftime, and he was a huge part of that. We've seen James Harden have huge game ones before with this franchise's superstar out.
Not one year ago.
Exactly.
Sure did.
We'll see if he can follow up on it better this time. But James Harden gave them a big-time performance that they absolutely needed, because Paul George wasn't great in this game either. It was Harden and Zubats who really just whooped the Mavs, but Zubats physically and then Harden with his jump shot.
Well, the Zubats thing is so critical. Just real quick, we talked about it coming in the series. When they have been at their best this year, it's been when he has been really good inside, and their tailspin sort of coincided with his calf injury a couple months ago. And if he's looking like he did today, he's been one of the best interior defenders in the league this year. And obviously he doesn't play as many minutes as some of the other guys, but that him controlling the paint, it's a really critical matchup in the series. And obviously he's probably not going to have Gafford and Lively look like quite like they did today, but he wins that matchup. That's a big advantage in the Clippers column.
Well, also he was played off the floor because Luka just hunted him so much the previous time these guys met in the playoffs. And there was none of that. And Luka took fault for not being aggressive. He had a crappy 33-point game. A lot of it was late. He was completely ineffective in the first half. Kyrie actually had a 20-point perfect shooting third quarter. Wasn't very good outside of that.
Well, hold on. We'll talk about that in the second half. Hold on 1 second. Bontemps, 1 year ago, you and I were sitting there in the TD Garden. Embiid is out with a knee injury.
Yep.
We're not sure what's going to happen in this series. We're like, geez, this might be a short one. Harden comes out, puts up 40. Mm-hmm. Actually, the long run might not have been good at all for the Sixers, because I think it made Harden think of him a certain way. So we have seen, we're not talking, you say, you know, prime Harden. We're not talking about the Warriors-Rockets series, Harden. You are exactly right. We saw this 1 year ago, and we saw Harden have another 40-point game in that series, and at other times completely vanish. And so I have this rule about never, ever, ever, ever overreacting to game one. I am not going to overreact to James Harden's performance, because I have seen it before. That said, it's as big of an X factor as you can find in the Western Conference playoffs right now.
Oh, no question about that. And not just like playoff past, Harden was awful down the stretch of the regular season.
A couple injuries.
Yeah, I was dealing with a foot thing, before that a shoulder thing, but just wasn't playing well, wasn't shooting well, was abysmal defensively. He needed a performance like this. They absolutely needed it with Kawhi out. But again, can you do it again and again and again? Because they might need four of those type of performances from.
Well, we don't know when Kawhi's coming back, if he's coming back this round. Yeah, we just don't know.
And I'll say this: Luka and Kyrie won't stink it up like they did in the first half on a regular basis. That'll probably be the worst half that they play in this series.
This is what I want to ask you. Second half, they won handily. You mentioned Kyrie going 8 of 8.
Yeah.
I mean, long story short, sometimes stuff like that matters and sometimes it doesn't. It depends. Do you think that mattered or not, that second half?
So Jay Kidd called them out at halftime for the lack of physicality, and he felt like they responded to that. They felt like they responded to that. I also think the Clippers kind of had it in chill mode after having been up 26 in the first or at halftime. I just think more than anything, the Mavericks realized we can't, like, a cute little 16-2 run in March and April doesn't mean jack squat right now. Like, yes, it means, hey, that's how they want to play, the style that they want to play. It kind of gives them something, a standard, but nobody cares that you won 16 of 18 games in March and April. It's playoff time now, and they had a total no-show in the first half. They got, you know, as Kyrie said, they got hit in the mouth. And I think there's the biggest thing to me that came out of game one for the Mavericks is a realization of you better show up or you will get run out.
Yeah, no question.
The big thing here, this drives me crazy. I work very hard not to quote players who say it, but my God, does it happen every freaking year? The team that loses without fail almost comes to the post-game press conference and says the other team came out more aggressive. It is the most tiresome quote in my world. And
like saying you got hired and you want to play faster and be exciting on offense.
And what's so crazy about it, not only is it just the same quote year after year after year, it's mind-boggling how you cannot be ready to go for a playoff game.
Yep.
But it happens all the time. And I'm telling you,
that's why the human beings playing the games.
Starting tomorrow when the game twos begin, and we're going to invariably see some of these series flip, I promise you the teams will come out and say they came out more aggressive or we came out more aggressive. It's like clockwork. And so for Luka to say that, it's like check mark. Thank you. First weekend of NBA. We can now move on of playoffs.
Yeah. And it was definitely the talking point coming out of the Mavs. But sometimes it's a cliche because it's true.
I know. Go back and
watch the Zubac post-ups early in that game. And he absolutely bullied him. He bullied Gafford.
He set the tone.
And it totally set the tone. And this game was over by midway through the second quarter.
He came out more aggressive. Yeah, I know.
Well, what he did was he backed him down, put his shoulder into his chest, put him underneath the hoop, and dropped in a couple of hooks. Next thing you know, Gafford's in foul trouble. And look, man, I don't know how much the Mavericks are going to get out of Derek Lively the second in the series. It is unbelievably difficult circumstances for a 20-year-old rookie who is grieving the death of his mother while coming back off of a knee sprain as a 20-year-old rookie.
They have other guys they can go to.
They have the option of going small with Maxey at five.
Well, and the thing is, all three of those guys, like, they don't really have a good post defender. And obviously, a lot of teams aren't throwing the ball in the post these days. But, like, Zubac is a very classic center in a lot of respects. And, well, Daniel Gafford's a nice player. And Derek Lively's obviously a nice player. Those guys are more modern bigs, like, coming over to help, that kind of stuff. They're not great if you're getting your shoulder into them, getting them in the post and scoring. And I will be interested to see what Dallas does to try to combat that, if they do anything, because Gafford's always been a guy that's been able to get in some foul trouble. And I wouldn't be shocked if that becomes a pretty consistent Clippers theme of, hey, if we can get Zubac in the post, A, you can get some points, and B, we might be able to sort of keep Gafford out of rhythm and therefore out of those pick and rolls with Luka catching lobs at the rim and, like, keeping Dallas from getting into what obviously was a tremendous rhythm over the past several weeks going into the playoffs.
I can see it now. Daniel Gafford sitting on the podium game two, Tuesday night. I came out more aggressive.
Okay.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We get the point.
He came out aggressive post game today because he's wearing these black leather pants that down the what is it, the out seam? I don't know. What's that thing called? The seam on the outside? Anyways, they had spikes. It's like, you might want to wear those.
Hey, listen, he played an afternoon game in L.A., was ready to hit the town.
Might want to wear those things when you're banging with the
banging in the post,
because you might need some weapons to deal with that dude.
Yeah. All right, up in Milwaukee, talk about not coming out aggressive.
Oof.
And coming out aggressive. Dame Lillard, who's already had some of the great individual performance playoff games we've already seen in the last decade, had one for the books. We had 35 points in the first half of this game, scored 0 points in the second half, sent ESPN Stats and Info Group scurrying to try to find a game like that. He obviously completely set the tone. So badly did the Bucks need a statement game from him.
Yep.
They just more than anything else, they needed some good feeling. They needed some reason to believe. And, you know, not just because Giannis is out, but because of the way they played down the stretch, because they're playing a team that was 4-1 against them. And I know they haven't played in months, and they just needed some positive vibes. And boy, he gave it to them in a gigantic wave, pretty much set the tone. The Pacers made a little bit of a game, but in the second half, the big thing for the Pacers was Tyrese Haliburton playing his first ever playoff game. Plays 38 minutes, takes 7 shots. He was totally passive. Didn't come out aggressive. Totally passive, looking to set up his teammates. Now, he was given credit for 8 assists. Stats and Info Group tracked him and saying that his teammates shot 9 of 26 off his passes, so he must not have gotten an assist. Maybe he should have gotten, but so even when he was passing, it wasn't leading to baskets. And this was the guy who tortured the Bucks earlier in the season when they were playing high speed.
Hey,
and you
we
remember
ain't
that
Vegas
game,
anymore, baby. We ain't Vegas.
Remember that game in Vegas, Bontemps, when we were there and we were at that post-game press conference and Haliburton had done the...
Oh, yeah. He'd tapped his wrist.
The wrist
was
tap.
Stomping his feet and strutting and feeling awfully
and listen,
good
they
about
were great that night.
The
they were great that night. And it was a great moment for the Pacers. They hadn't had a moment like that in forever.
Great moment for the league. It was fun.
And, Dame said something like, you know,
I got
be
the
humble.
Quote in front of me. When you're having your moment, and Dame basically said, hey, like, I'm not tripping. Many
no,
times
he said
I've
he
done
gave
that
credit
to people.
Right.
I can't be upset when someone else does it. He says, I've also known when you were having your moment, it's important to be careful and be humble. And today might have been a humbling experience.
Yeah, he said something. Well, he said, you never know when the tables can turn. Well, they turned months later, but they turned. And, you know, for one day. Pascal Siakam, by the way, was absolutely great in this game.
Pascal Siakam looked like a player who'd been in the playoffs. The rest of the Pacers looked like they'd never seen a high school playoff game. It was a truly embarrassing performance. Obviously, they missed a lot of wide open shots. I mean, they went 8-for-38 from three, most of them very wide open.
Yes.
But, I mean, there was repeated just absolute catastrophic defensive breakdowns, even from a terrible defensive team, which the Pacers have been most of the year. Just giving up wide open layups. Like, and by the way, not wide open layups like Patrick Beverley, who you're maybe not paying attention to. Like Chris Middleton cutting down the lane, wide open, getting the ball for
Middleton
layup.
Played very well, which was, I think, more important than almost anything for the Bucks.
Yes, we talked about it the other day going into the series. Like Chris Middleton versus Aaron Nesmith. It thought like Aaron Nesmith being on the same level as him is a weird thing to say, but that was going to be a critical matchup. Aaron Nesmith 1-for-7 from three. 2-for-9 overall in 37 minutes. Chris Middleton went 9-for-14 from the field, had 23 and 10, and 4 assists and 1 turnover.
I still think by far the most important thing for the Bucks was the fact that Damian Lillard's cape still fits, at least for a half.
Yeah, look, he was
because
great.
Giannis in this series seems pretty unlikely. Is that fair to say?
I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but here's what I want to just say about Giannis. When he went down, it wasn't just the injury that where he fell down in that moment. Remember, he had been having a sore Achilles and a sore leg, and there's giant flashing red flags all around. And frankly, they were probably thanking their lucky stars that we were not talking about a catastrophic injury, and they've got to keep that in mind.
No, for sure.
Got to keep that in mind.
And look,
so
we'll see what happens.
Point being, Dame's got to be at a superstar level probably 4 times in this series.
Yeah, more than once. I don't know about 4, but more than once.
And he was in this game for sure. But like, the look, Dame showed he can, like you said, McMahon, whether he did it in the second half or not, he had 35 points of the game. He shot the ball well. He got wherever he wanted in the first half. He showed he can do it. Chris Middleton looked great, showed he could do it. Obviously, the Bucks have all been there before. The question's going to be, how do the Pacers respond from this performance? Rick Carlisle obviously has had a ton of success in his career. He did a lot of weird stuff in this game. Like, there were moments when Pascal Siakam and Tyrese Haliburton both were on the bench. Very odd. They were running out there with, I mean, Ben Shepherd played 10 minutes in the game. He did not look like he wanted to have anything to do with the ball after he missed a couple threes in the second half. The Bucks ran 10 miles away from Obi Toppin, let him shoot over and over again. He was awful. Like, it's going to be interesting to see. And by the way, TJ McConnell, who has been a big part of their play down the stretch, again showed that while he is a very good 82-game player, the fact that he is not very willing to shoot anywhere outside the lane, it makes it hard for him to be an effective playoff player. So, again, we saw the star point guard for Milwaukee step up and play great in game one. We talked on Friday about, are we going to see the Tyrese Haliburton from before he got hurt, the guy who was playing and dominating in the in-season tournament? Mm-hmm. Are we going to see the other guy? Game one, we didn't even see the other guy. He was barely visible on the court. So Pascal Siakam stepped up, did what he was supposed to do. Let's see how Tyrese Haliburton responds in game two, because the Pacers are obviously going to need way more from him if they want to make this a competitive series.
Well, they also hard-trapped Dame in the second half, and Dame was willing to give it up. He didn't feel the need to press it. We'll see whether they sell out defensively on Lillard more. Also,
I would be doing that personally. I mean, look, the Pacers also, by the way, did go 8 for 38 from three in this game again, and a lot of them were open. Pacers are probably going to hit more shots, and I do think this is going to come down to, can the Bucks keep up with them scoring?
They had their lowest scoring game of the year and their lowest shooting percentage game of the year.
Right.
So you're
going to, they should be better.
You're wagering, if you're Rick Carlisle, that that's not going to continue. I will say he didn't play Doug McDermott in his initial rotation. Again, not that Doug McDermott is going to be the difference in this game, but they couldn't make a three, and he had his best three-point shooter out of the rotation. So,
he had to get in a Nebraska reference. Creighton alum, Doug.
Omaha, Golden City on the Hill.
That's right.
Omaha corner.
Remember one of them fancy Omaha country clubs?
Yeah, he hits the hell out of the ball off the tee. Okay, first game of the day. By the way, his brother is a caddy on the PGA Tour, just so you know that. Facts, factoids. First game
Do
of the
we
day.
We have to talk about this game? Can we just move it along?
Well, just mention that no one's beaten the Celtics if they're hitting 22 threes, which they did in this game.
God bless the Heat. Full respect to the Heat. They have earned everything, all the respect over the years. The Heat are not winning this series. Terry Rozier is going to play. Jimmy Butler's not going to play. It's impressive they got into the playoffs with all the injuries they've had. This ain't going to be competitive.
It's not that impressive. They're in the East.
Bam had a good game today. Bam finally, at long last for the Heat fans, is a finalist for Defensive Player of the Year. He will finish third.
Yeah.
He had a really good game.
How do you know he's going to finish third? How do you know that?
Because Victor is going to finish second and Gobert is going to finish first.
Okay, we will see if Victor finishes second. We'll see.
Victor is going to get first place votes, buddy. And I wish I had the guts to give him mine.
We will see which of them finishes second. We will see. Right. I also don't really care who finishes second. I just was amused at you declaring that you knew the voting. That's all.
I don't know it, but I feel like I'm on pretty firm ground there.
That was a prediction.
But point being, we don't need to spend a lot of time on this series.
I just want to say one thing. Late in the game, about a minute and a half left or so, there was an incident that was the big talking point after this game.
Yes.
Jason Tatum is going for a rebound. Caleb Martin comes in, hits him very hard in a loose ball foul. Tatum gets totally upended and falls very hard on his hip. And his head didn't actually hit the court, but his head snapped. It was a very scary fall. And the collision was shockingly intense. Jaylen Brown immediately steps to Caleb Martin. Tatum hops back up in 2 seconds, which that was good to see, but I was thinking to myself, how is he going to feel walking out of the gym? Because that was a hard landing. Tatum then goes over and thanks Jaylen Brown for having his back. And then after the game, everybody gets asked whether they thought it was a dirty play. Now, when you watch the replay from far away, it looks like Drew Holiday. First off, Caleb Martin comes flying in. He's at the three-point line. He sees a rebound. It's a game's not close, but he's still in. Caleb Martin comes flying in, and it looks like, if you watch it in one angle, it looks like he comes out of nowhere to hit Tatum. When you watch it from a farther angle, Drew Holiday appears to push him. Not like a really hard shove, but Drew Holiday appears to push him a little bit, which may have caused him to lose control and run into Tatum. But you got people out there, including Brian Scalabrine, who frankly accused Eric Spoelstra of calling a timeout and then instructing him to do that, which that's preposterous. But that was the only thing in this game. And I don't really actually believe he did it on purpose. It was a little bit of an aggressive moment. The only reason I'm mentioning this is I want you to, if you're going to watch game two on Tuesday, I think it's on Tuesday, just keep an eye out early in that game in case there's any.
You just pull it up?
Yeah, because I didn't get to watch. Well, I didn't have to watch.
You were
any
covering
of this,
the. You were covering the game.
It was pregame for me.
He is fine. Just so in case someone who was not paying attention hears this and wonders, is Tatum have any issues? He had no issues.
Well, I'm sure he's fine. I'm just saying he's going to be sore. He's going to be sore on Monday. I'll tell you that.
Holiday had two hands in the back, but I don't think that Cody Martin necessarily minded his momentum being sped right
Cody
into.
Martin was not involved, but Caleb Martin.
I'm sorry, Caleb Martin. My bad. Yeah. The other twin.
Wouldn't be a Celtics Heat game without some chippiness. That's the end of that.
All right. Well, just
it'll be a chippy gentleman sweep.
Okay.
I don't think it'll be a gentleman sweep.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
The best game on Saturday was the game that you were at, Bontemps. 76ers Knicks. Knicks win by 7. Josh Hart is a hero of this game down the stretch, throwing in a couple of threes late. But the real story of this game was Embiid going down. He was playing really well before that. Philly had the lead.
Well, by the way, Joel Embiid went down doing the Tracy McGrady All-Star Game dunk in a playoff game.
Yeah, yes,
in
thank
traffic
you.
Over Mitchell Robinson. It was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in a playoff game, followed by him laying on the ground and me thinking, well, here we go again, like a week ago. Is the guy done or not?
Well, one wonders if he should be doing that play with his...
Listen, it was the Joel Embiid experience in a nutshell. Doing a breathtaking play, followed by wondering if he's going to play, then seeing him come back out with 20 seconds to go on the halftime clock and walking on the court and being ready to play.
I was like, hold on, he's on the court to start a second half? I'm sitting here going, oh my gosh.
But you kind of called it in the group text.
Is he going to play for Team USA? I'm like, I'm freaking out. I hope he's ready for training camp.
I'll be stunned if he plays
for
Team USA.
He's ready for the second half.
I'll be pleasantly surprised if he's able to play for Team USA.
Well, I was pleasantly surprised that he played the second half.
Bontemps, you kind of called it in the group chat. You were like, it kind of looked like what he did.
I also called it on Twitter. It was the exact same thing that happened against Orlando a week before.
I'm not sitting on Twitter all the time.
I know. I'm just saying it was the exact same, all the exact same stuff. He made a drive to the basket. Obviously, this was a bit more, obviously way more of an actual highlight play. Ooh. And we didn't talk to Joel after the game. He didn't want to speak to the media. So I don't know exactly what happened, but my read of it is he landed on his leg and panicked a bit and thought he felt something, and then he went and got checked out, and he was all right. Then he came back,
but he thought
he did something serious. Just the overhead shot where you see like he was in a panic, his eyes were like rolling back.
Well, the eye thing, he also terrified. Got poked in the eye during the game, was messing with his eye the whole game too. So I don't know what's going on.
He's so terrified. Hard to read because he's constantly bent over. He's got like kind of that Jim Brown thing where he's constantly bent over. He's constantly limping. He's constantly messing with his knee. We don't know whether his knee is killing him or he's messing with his
brace. As I've said before, for people to know too, whenever he wears a mask, whenever he wears a brace, every single stoppage, he's messing with it. He's trying to take it off. He's taking it off. He's putting it on. He's throwing the mask away. When he's wearing the mask, he'd throw the mask away twice a game. There's always stuff going on.
And honestly, right. Luka's the same way. These guys, there's like six times a game. Oh my God, he's hurt. He's hurt. It's like, oh wait, no, he's healthy. He just got the ball has healing power sometimes.
You're
like,
right. Both Luka and Joel, even at the best of times, they lumber.
They lumber. They lumber. They stay down. They are quite expressive.
Luka's always grimacing.
I would say that Embiid has a flair for the dramatic. I think that's fair to say.
Right. Having said that.
I don't think I do believe he felt like serious fear.
Yeah, look, whatever happened. I mean, look, he's not leaving a playoff game for drama. Like he also
wasn't the same because he was 2 of 13 in the second half. He got no rebounds. He had no lift to get any rebounds.
Well,
yet +21. He's +21 when he's playing. They lose
He was +14. Oh. He was +14. They got outscored by 21 in the 11 minutes
that's
he didn't
what it
play.
Was. Okay,
he was
that's
+14.
21.
But look, here's the thing. The
he's plus 14,
quarter,
they lose by 7.
That's right. That's the thing. That's right. In the first quarter, he goes 5 for 9, has, I think, 15 points. Looked great. The rest of the game, he was a combined 3 for 13 from the field. Every time there was a stoppage, you could see him sort of doing some jumpers. He looked like he was trying to get his legs underneath him. His shot wasn't really there. And we talked about it on Friday. I've been at, I think I wasn't at the Memphis game he played at. I've been at every other game he's played at since he came back. The thing that's very obvious is he's not driving to the rim quite as much, understandably.
He's not even anywhere near the rim. He doesn't even go there and there to rebound.
Well,
oh, he was near the rim when he threw the ball off the backboard.
Well, he's near the
like
rim.
Gerald Hawkins.
Yeah, it's the McGrady dunk from the All-Star game. He's near the rim, but he's not aggressively jumping and going after the ball. Now, again, he's a mountain of a human being, so he doesn't always have to jump. He can just grab the ball. But when you're playing the Knicks, the number one offensive rebounding team in the league, Mitchell Robinson, the number one offensive rebounding individual player in the league, Isaiah Hartenstein, the seventh best offensive rebounding player in the league individually, coming into this series from Philly's standpoint, the biggest thing I wondered about was how are they going to do on the offensive glass? Because in the game on Wednesday that they barely beat Miami in, the Heat were getting all sorts of offensive rebounds. I think they had 17 in that game. They were flying around. And other than Embiid, the Sixers are fairly small. And in this game, they had 23 offensive rebounds. Mitchell Robinson had 7 by himself, 26-8 edge in second chance points in a game they lost by 7. Like
can't win that way in the playoffs.
You can't win that way in the playoffs. Now, if it's, they're probably going to lose. They're going to get beat on the offensive glass every game. They're going to get beat in second chance points every game because the Knicks do that religiously. But if it's 15 offensive rebounds and it's 16 second chance points, that's manageable. If it's 20 plus in both those categories, totally different circumstance. And that was what bit them in that game on Saturday night.
Well, to lose when Brunson goes 8 of 26, that's a huge, huge missed opportunity.
On the other hand, though, Jaylen did not shoot the ball well. The Knicks had basically every other outlier performance go in their favor.
Trace McBride, 5 threes.
Well, Deuce McBride has been great. Miles McBride, their backup point guard,
Trace,
has been tremendous for weeks now. He has played well. He's probably not going to go for 20 every game.
You think he'll be plus 37 every game off the bench?
Probably not. Bojan Bogdanović had 13 points off the bench. It was easily the best game he's had as a Knick. Was really good. Mitchell Robinson, again, off the bench was great. And Josh Hart, fourth quarter, hits 3 threes in a row after starting the game 1 for 5. Josh Hart hadn't hit 3 threes in a game all – hadn't hit more than 3 threes
in a game
all year.
Oh, you were trying to bench Josh Hart. You were in the group chat whining and crying and trying to bench the guy.
Well, I thought what they were going to do late in the game was go with Dante DiVincenzo, Deuce McBride, and Jalen Brunson. What happened, though, instead – was Tibbs got mad at Dante DiVincenzo for gambling. He sat him on the bench. He played Deuce McBride instead.
Gambling with shots, just to be clear, in the
No Jontay Porter.
Actually gambling with fouls and reaching in for steals and getting out of position. But Josh Hart, they ran away from him and said, you got to make shots. The last three hit was a double pump fling over two guys that went in. You know, so like the Knicks did have some outlier performances go in their favor. The Sixers overall didn't play very well. I think this is going to be a really long series. I suspect it's going to be 2-2 one way or the other after 4 games, and we'll see what happens. But the offensive rebounding battle, that I think if you're looking at specific things to watch, that's the thing to watch going forward, is can Philly do somewhat of a better job? And the other thing too, by the way, Tobias Harris got benched in the fourth quarter for a second straight game. He looks totally checked out. Obviously, he's a free agent this summer. Interested to see what happens there. But
well, the Sixers got to get something off their bench. They got nothing off their bench.
How hilarious is it that a Tibbs team won a playoff game because his bench absolutely dominated? It was a 42-7 advantage.
Buddy Hield looked like he was in his first playoff game.
Yes, Buddy Hield still has never scored a point in the playoffs.
Yes. I mean, Buddy didn't hit some shots. And look, it's been interesting. They moved Kelly Oubre into the starting lineup for Nick Batum a while ago. And Oubre has been very good down the stretch for Philly. But by doing that, the guys coming off the bench for them are not really scorers other than Buddy. Like Paul Reed, who I think, you know, Nick Nurse hinted today that he might play him and Embiid together a little bit, which they haven't done much of, but that would certainly be an interesting alignment. Paul Reed's a very aggressive offensive rebounder, get on the glass. If you play him with Embiid, maybe mitigate some of those issues on the boards. But whether it's Paul Reed or Batum, the guys they're generally coming off the bench now aren't really scorers. So you're probably going to see the bench scoring fairly heavily tip in New York's favor a lot in this series, but
42-7?
Well, Yes, they're not going to get, they're not getting 20 from Deuce every game, and they're not going to get 15 from Boyan every game. But what they need is they need more from Oubre, and they have to get more from Tobias Harris. Like, mm-hmm. seven shots in 30-some minutes is not going to get it done. Because Tyrese Maxey can get to the rim whenever he wants. He figured that out in the second half. Joel's probably going to play better shooting the ball in game two. But they're going to need some of these other guys to score. But look, this series is going to be an absolute war. The Garden was incredible on Saturday. I'm sure it's going to be incredible Monday night. Same thing back in Philly when the series shifts there. And this thing's going to go really long, and we'll see who comes out on top.
All right. The other somewhat close game in the West, that was in the West on Saturday, was the Nuggets and Lakers. Nuggets were behind for most of the first half of this game and third quarter.
Give them some hope, McMahon. Give them some hope.
Well, you know what? The hope here is Darvin Ham says, I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but I'm paraphrasing, didn't want to show everything in game one. There's some adjustments to be made. You just didn't want to show them all.
Brutal.
And I think, you know what? I think what happened last year, he held on to him too long. He was going to come with the really good stuff in game five. And gosh darn it, they just didn't get to game five.
This was amazing. This was amazing.
So
Jovan Buha tweets after the game, Darvin Ham says the Lakers have a couple more adjustments. They're going to throw it to Nikola Jokic. He added the Lakers didn't want to use all their adjustments in game one. Obedit Durando, Denver Post beat writer, play star guy Mike Singer, we've talked about before in the past, he tweets this quote from Darvin Ham after game one of last year's Western Conference Finals.
Oh, no.
Quote, we didn't want to go too deep into the in-game adjustments. It's still that ultimate chess game. So we were comfortable with the results. If we need to go back to it, it's there. But along with several other things, we didn't unveil tonight.
I like Darvin, but that's...
I love Darvin. I'm not making fun of Darvin.
It's rough.
History repeating itself again.
Well, now the hilarious thing...
10 in a row?
At least he didn't
row?
Say they came out more aggressive. At least he didn't
that's say right.
that.
Didn't say sure. that. Are we? How many losses is it in a row? Is it 10? Is it
11?
Is it 100?
Nine, but it feels like 17.
It's en route to 12.
Feels like 17, and it might be 12 soon.
Listen, remember...
And by the way, again, the Lakers did the right thing in playing the game the other day to win the game and not getting on the other side of the bracket. Because I would maintain their best chance to beat the Nuggets, whether they are going to or not, which I don't think they're going to, is when LeBron James has not gone through two rounds of the playoffs first.
I know, but the Lakers probably would have beaten the Thunder tonight. Go ahead, McMahon.
Well, so after game one last year, the Lakers made one of those kind of, it's not really a comeback because it never was in doubt, but they made up some ground in the second half with Rui Hachimura as the primary defender on Joker and AD in that kind of roaming type of role. And so that was the big, this is a thing. And Michael Malone basically sat up on the podium before game two and chastised and mocked anybody who thought that was going to make one iota of difference.
Does anyone enjoy playing the Lakers more than Michael Malone?
Oh my God. He loves screwing with them.
I mean, dude, Joker was so
he's got a bazooka. Game. He's holding a bazooka and the other team's got a slingshot. Of course he's going to be arrogant.
Well, and listen, when LeBron is David, Goliath's a really bad dude. And this is a really bad dude who freaking showed up to the game dressed up as a cartoon character.
After he was in the commercial for the movie.
Well, he was doing it because of the commercial.
Yes. Like, my point is,
this is how concerned he was about the Lakers. He was.
Yeah, how loose is Joker for the opening of the playoffs?
He's doing a commercial.
And
Despicable Me commercial. Despicable Me 4.
How much money did they have to
Despicable
give?
Despicable Me 4 is in how many games this series is going to last.
Yeah, I set you up for that one, buddy.
By the way, here's what Gru did in game one. 15 of 23, 65. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. 12 boards. Didn't really have a great rebounding game, he would probably say. 7 assists. No triple-double. C+. No turnovers. By the way, AD in this game had 32 points, 14 rebounds, 5 assists, and 4 blocks. Do you know the last time, according to Stats and Info, that two centers went for 30, 10, and 5 assists in a playoff game?
We're talking like Duncan and Shaq.
Wilt against Kareem.
Akeem and Robinson.
Wilt and Kareem is my final answer.
Try 62, Russell versus Wilt.
Russell Wilt.
Yeah. I knew it was Wilt, damn it.
It's always Wilt and somebody.
So
well,
like
by the way.
AD goes for 32, 14, 5, and 4, and is minus 12.
Yeah,
he's
and you
playing
know what?
Those Here's minutes the against Gru.
And the most telling
the minions
play of the whole
have a better chance of guarding Joker than AD or Bam Adebayo or Rudy Gobert or any other badass defensive center who you want to throw out there.
Well, and the most unstoppable, telling play.
He's the MVP. By the way, did anybody watch this weekend of basketball? There's a reason why you say this guy is clearly the best player in the league right now.
That's right. No disrespect to Giannis or Shea or Luka or any of these other guys, but that guy's at the top of the mountain. Now, to me, the play that summed up the whole game and frankly sums up Nikola Jokic, a minute and a half left, he gets a rebound off a missed shot by the Lakers. Anthony Davis, his hands are on his knees. He is out of gas completely. I'm not saying this to make fun of AD, but the point is coming. And LeBron is coming back in transition. Nikola Jokic passes the ball up, sprints down court, sprints past LeBron, catches the ball, lays it in, gets fouled on the play. The thing that nobody talks about with Jokic.
He pushed off on LeBron on the way. The Lakers never get any calls.
No, totally. That's the problem here.
The thing nobody talks about.
Scott Foster?
The thing nobody talks about Jokic, and it's understandable because to some degree because of his physique and the way he looks, and he doesn't look like some Greek god, is the guy has gotten himself into unbelievable shape. And after earlier in his career, looking pretty tired at times in the playoffs, the one thing you never talk about this guy is he never looks tired. He's always playing at the same speed, and you see it late in these games because I think it's a huge part of why Denver is so good at the end of games because obviously he's a fantastic passer. Obviously he's got an unbelievable basketball IQ, but when you make more mistakes when you're tired and when you're fatigued and when you're not totally at your best. And this guy is at his best all the time. And that moment of the game, watching him do that after taking these guys apart in the second half, it just sums up to me where Jokic is at and why, you know, I from all season long thought they're the best team and they're going to win again.
And they're the best clutch team. And he's one of the best clutch players because at the end of the game, they have it. By the way, their starting lineup was plus 19, I believe, in this game. And that was with Jamal Murray shooting 9 of 24. They also got just 6 free throws. I was making a joke about the Lakers never getting any calls. The Lakers had 500 more free throws or something than their opponents this year. I don't know what it was.
507, I believe it is.
Well, how much was it?
I think it was 507.
Well, it's now 520 because they had 13 more in game one. So it is what it is. I wish the Lakers luck. Maybe they can take a game. Suns Timberwolves. This was interesting. This was a surprising game. Not that the Timberwolves won, but that the Timberwolves never trailed, completely dominated the Suns from start to finish. The Suns came in with actually a hint of swagger into this game.
Absolutely. A hint. They had just throttled the Timberwolves in Minnesota and said, hey, we're going to kick our feet up in your house all week long, buddy, because we're playing you in the first round. You couldn't bounce us into the play-in when you had a chance.
Yep. What I couldn't figure out about this game, by the way, Ant played great. Ant went head-to-head with Durant.
We're going to talk about Ant.
But Kevin Durant had 28 points with about seven or eight minutes in the third quarter. Like, they never gave him the ball. He had 5 shots in the whole. He was on his way to 45 points.
And he was hitting tough, contested mid-rangers. But he was in one of those things where it's like, there's nothing you can do about him right now.
And they never gave him the ball. He had 5 shots in the second half. Now, granted, we got into garbage time in the fourth quarter, but he had 5 shots in the second half, which he made all 5. I'm like, he had a matchup advantage on Karl Towns. Like, obviously.
Well, they didn't play Towns a lot. Towns' minutes ended up, what did he end up playing? 26, I believe. They pulled him because of that.
This has always been the thing with Durant is that he's never been a guy that's gonna, even if he's got a good matchup advantage, he's never been a guy, and I say this mostly as a compliment, he's never been a guy who's gonna hijack the team and just, even if he's got a great matchup, and just go after it over and over again. Now, in this moment, if you're a Suns fan, you probably would have liked him to do that, but that's never really been how he's played. And you know, the guy on the other side, though, he was very happy to both get whatever shots he could and say whatever else he wanted about it. And by the way, all this talk about the Phoenix Suns figured out something against Ant in the regular season. I was fairly confident that wasn't going to carry over to the playoffs, and it certainly didn't carry over to the playoffs.
Well, Ant had 33, and he went at Durant repeatedly. I think went he at had Durant, six or seven shots on him.
And after one of them, a tough three, Durant contests. Sorry, bro. Ant's in a groove. Good luck. Swishes, and he's barking. He's chit-chatting.
All the way down the court.
All the way down the court. Huge smile. And, you know, KD, I respect this. KD had a big smile because
Well, KD loves that stuff.
Yeah. And look, like Ant is one of those dudes. And it absolutely was one of those. This is a longtime face of the league. This is a guy rising to the moment. This is a guy with the game. This is the guy with the personality. 22 years old. He is going to be a superstar for a long, long time. He was absolutely awesome in this game. Gobert was great.
Gobert with 16 and 14 and plus 19.
Yeah, anchoring the defense. I tell you what, Nickeil Alexander-Walker was huge in this game. A plus 28, scored 18 points. That's a bonus. Like I said, they played Towns only 27 minutes, Naz Reid only 19. They played Gobert and four guard/wings for long stretches of this game. Dude, Tim Connelly, the move, we've talked a lot about getting Mike Conley and how much of a difference that made for this team. The fact that he also got Nickeil Alexander-Walker in that deal. And
multiple teams gave up on him last year, just didn't want him. Multiple. Yes. I think maybe even three.
He has become a phenomenal role player. And he also credit Chris Finch. Finch was with him early in Alexander Walker's career in New Orleans. He wanted to coach him again. But this guy has become a great 3-and-D role player, a great fit for that team. And he was one of the guys who really turned this game.
Yeah, Conley had a bad game. Conley was 2-of-12 with foul trouble.
But boy, he was mic'd up, and he sure was enjoying the Ant show.
Yeah. Well, he was. And by the way, LeBron was mic'd up too. LeBron, I don't know if you're required to be mic'd up at least once in the playoffs, but LeBron always takes the mic in game one of the first round, and then the mic shall never be seen by him again.
They probably had to use the old bleep button a few times, the way Joker was doing those guys.
We'll see. This was a surprise. I mean, I wasn't surprised that the Wolves won. I mean, you're going to win at home game ones. It happens. This was a real strong effort by a team that has not had almost any playoff success.
I was surprised by the margin. And listen, I've learned don't get too caught up in what the final margin is. It's not like the points carry over to the next game, but I was surprised just how convincing it was. And it felt like a statement performance by Ant in particular.
The quote from Ant, by the way, with the Durant back and forth was awesome. He goes, I think everybody knows it's my favorite player of all time. So that was probably one of the best feelings ever in my whole life, for sure.
Yeah.
If you look at the smile on Ant's face as he's talking to Durant, it's very obvious it's one of the best moments of his entire life.
He typically downplays stuff. He typically, you know, hey, Ant, you scored 46 consecutive points. Dope. Hey, Ant, you that play, that dunk that you had got 17 million likes on TikTok. Dope.
Well, he both does that and then says things like, I could be like the best hitter in baseball and like
MVP, but that's
in football.
Just,
and like, oh, you know, he does that also.
But like, he genuinely was into it. By the way, a couple of things in this game. First off, Grayson Allen was just a very important floor stretcher, three-point shooter. He rolled his ankle in this game, didn't come back. That treatment and whether he comes back is a big factor because, frankly, the Suns just don't have any depth. Even though Royce O'Neal played well off the bench in his stead, his availability is big. And then Kyle Anderson, whose importance was a little bit diminished because Towns is back. But Kyle Anderson also got hurt in this game, had a hip injury. So,
well, then, but, you know, I mentioned that they played Rudy and wing/guards for a lot of this game. Kyle Anderson would probably be on the floor most of the time in those lineups. And that makes what Nickeil Alexander-Walker did just that much more important.
No question. No question.
Keep an eye on that one. I'm still believe that one's going to be a long series. Okay. First game out of the shoot on Saturday was one of the more uninteresting games, unless you're a Cavs fan. They won relatively
unless you operate
easily.
Cavs Corner, sponsored by nobody.
The 97-83, a 14-point game. The Cavs led by double digits, a lot of it. They came out right out of the gate, hit their first 5 3-pointers, and they
then they missed a trillion in a row.
I think they missed 18 in a row after that.
There was a stretch in the third quarter where if the ball hit the rim, it was some kind of like awesome.
At either end.
This was a disturbingly disgusting game to watch.
It so was rough.
Between Jalen Suggs, Gary Harris, Joe Ingles, Markelle Fultz, and Cole Anthony, I think the Magic backcourt was 4 of 36 shooting in this game, or 4 of 34, something like that.
And honestly, Banchero, he had 24 points, 9 of 17, but he had 9 turnovers, nothing like the
No,
Magic.
Banchero did not have a good
4 game. For 35 and 1 for 17 from three-point range from those five players.
The Magic as a team shot 32.6%. It was just, honestly, this was a horrible, horrible offense performance. Like, obviously, you knew the Magic were a bottom 10 offense in the league. You knew scoring in the playoffs was going to be tough for them. But, man, this was hard to watch.
It was very hard to watch.
And it lasted forever, so it bumped every game back the rest of the day. Listen, at a certain point, like, fans should be able to vote. Do you just want to, like, you know, put this thing on, like, Ocho or something the fourth quarter and just get on to the rest of the games? My
Evan
goodness.
Mobley had 16 points, 11 rebounds, and the Magic were 3 of 16 shooting when he was a primary defender.
I think this would have been great so ESPN played, News programming.
Jared Allen, who last year sort of infamously said the lights were too bright for him, 16 points and 18 rebounds. But the big thing for the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell had 30 points, good explosion, mm-hmm. was able to get past his primary defender, which a lot of people thought would be Jalen Suggs because Suggs is their best perimeter defender.
Yeah.
The primary.
He's also big enough to bang Donovan Mitchell and didn't really guard him at all.
Donovan's That's last surprising. Game of the regular season, which was against the Pacers, he had a 30-point game, was his first 30-point game in 6 weeks. And he has another one here. They're very hard to beat when he scores at that level.
Well, and look, when the Cavs were rolling this year, it was Donovan Mitchell and Jared Allen were both playing at Donovan at a superstar level and Allen at an all-star level.
Well, and Jamie Bickerstaff deserves a ton of credit because they had the Magic dialed up on defense. And like Paolo Banchero had 9 made field goals and had 9 turnovers. Pretty much all of them were horrendous turnovers.
Yeah.
And a lot of them were generated by the Cavs playing into his tendencies, knowing exactly what he was going to do. He kept trying to hard dribble into the lane with his right hand. And whether it was Donovan or one of the guards would swipe down and be right there and trap him or force him into a bad pass. Like they were all over all the stuff that Orlando wanted to do. Now Orlando looked like a team that had their deer in the headlights look all the way through. And we, again, to go back to the youth and inexperience being in the first time in the playoffs for a lot of these teams, that certainly showed up in this game. Mm-hmm. But I do think the Cavs deserve a lot of credit for how that was set
they
up.
They came out more aggressive.
They did. You really beat that into the ground, just like the shots were beaten into the ground with all the bricks.
Hey, wait until I tell you how competitive the Lakers being swept is going to be.
You know, and it also felt like a game where Jamal Mosley, who's done a phenomenal job, deservedly a finalist for Coach of the Year, felt like a week where he had way too much time to think going into this game because they got a little too cute with the Jalen Suggs thing, having him guard Darius Garland, mm-hmm. not guard Donovan Mitchell. Might want to just have him on Donovan Mitchell. Starting Jonathan Isaac was odd. He started the final game of the regular season. I know there was some tea leaves that he might do that because Wendell Carter Jr. started that game or didn't play in that game because he had back spasms that he got after guarding Joel Embiid the game before. But it didn't really work either. Like, right. Would have made more sense to have Carter out there early and have Isaac with the second unit like he'd been all year. So, like, they got a lot of adjustments to make. They'll probably play better. But Cleveland to come out and set the tone and play the way they did. And like you said, most importantly, have Donovan looking like all-star Donovan Mitchell again, bouncing around. Donovan Mitchell's the best player in the series. Going to be very hard for the Cavs to lose it.
We'll see. Game 2 on Monday night in Cleveland. All right. Thanks for going through all these games with us. We're not going to have as many series to go through on a daily basis, but we will be back later this week. Check us out on ESPN2 on Wednesday. this week because change it up for the playoffs. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to McMahon and Bontemps. And thank you for listening and watching Hoop Collective. We will talk to you later this week.
Adios, amigos.